It is simply amazing how quickly civilization, or at least the facade of civilization, comes crashing down. This last week, you know, power's got to go out for just a day or two. And, well, I tell you what, during the storm, I'll tell you my story here, my storm story here in a few minutes. During the storm of last week, we watched civilization crumble before our very eyes within the space of about, what was it, Jeff, maybe a minute and a half? The distance, the time it took for us to get from the plane back into Lambert Airport during that storm, we watched civilization go from, you know, here we are sitting on the high-tech plane waiting to take a trip out to Denver and Colorado Springs. Plans are all ahead of us. Next thing you know, it's practically jungle warfare.
We were inside
Lambert Airport.
More than a minute and a half.
It took more than a minute?
The
time it took from walking into the airport with the power out, how long did it take before it was basically every man for himself?
Less than a minute and a half.
Yes. We'll tell the whole story here in a few minutes, but I want to hear your storm story as well. It's open lines for the first hour of Issues, Etc. Today we'll be talking about the storm. Was your church prepared for the power outage? And, of course, the power outage continues for many people in the St. Louis area. Among them, Craig, you don't have any power at home?
No power.
No power at home. You're just living, what? You're just out there with Frank and Mom.
Caveman days.
You're roasting pigs over an open fire. I can picture it. Caveman days at Craig's house. Was your church prepared to deal with not only what was happening among the members of your church during the blackout, but people outside the church? Did your church do anything to help the parishioners or those who weren't parishioners of your church? And I want you to brainstorm with me here in this first hour of Open Lines about what the church can do, how the church can be prepared the next time a crisis like this strikes our area. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Monday. It's the 24th of July. Our in-studio email address, you can use that just as well to post questions or comments during Open Lines, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Everybody who calls in or emails with a question or a comment on this issue gets a free booklet published by LCMS World Relief titled The Church's Role of Mercy in the Community. Everybody who calls in, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. As I said, we're back live with you this Monday, the 24th of July. After Open Lines, in the second hour, Serge Trifkovic will join us. We're going to talk about the Middle East crisis. That story continues to unfold, and I have come to value Serge's thoughts on that particular sphere of geopolitics. Then we've got some more audio open lines throughout the rest of the day here on Issues, Etc. That means you need to man the phones, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. During audio open lines throughout the show, we'll hear a piece from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. Dr. Francis Collins has been all over the place in the media. Time Magazine, the AP had an interview with him. He's been everywhere. PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly talked to this guy who basically, they say, decoded the human genome. He didn't decode it. He just told us what the letters were in the human genome. The decoding is a much bigger task. And he opines on things like creation and evolution. He thinks they're really one and the same. And even on embryonic stem cell research. We'll play that for your reaction a little bit later in the program. Michael J. Fox and Senator Orrin Hatch both chiming in on embryonic stem cell research and reacting to the president's veto of federal funding for embryonic stem cell research last week. And there's a CBS News interview with Catherine Jefferts Shorey, who is, of course, the newly elected first female bishop of the Episcopal Church USA, saying many of the same things she said before. Everybody has to ask her about being a pilot. And so she likes to talk about soaring through the clouds. National Public Radio also brings us an update from the Darfur peace agreement. It seems to be falling apart. And the big story that everybody's talking about, of course, today is William F. Buckley dissenting from the president's view on the Middle East, the war in Iraq, and a general conservative dissent in the president's party. We'll get to all of that during audio open lines. But first, let's talk about the storm a little bit. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Did your church do anything? Here you are, Wednesday night It struck right around dinner time. By the time everything was over with, it was well past dinner time. It was dark. Did your church spring into action? Did they do anything to help the parishioners or people outside your church? Was your church prepared for what has proven to be, well, I think they declared it a disaster area, didn't they? Aren't we living now in a disaster area? Yeah, I think the president did declare it a disaster area, and I think the governor also made the same declaration, which means that there are National Guard troops helping clear the debris, making sure everybody's got water. National Guard is great. One thing I learned in the whole storm scenario was that the city of St. Louis is ill-prepared for this. But what about the churches in this area? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you think that the church in general is prepared to deal with a really major crisis? This was of at least catastrophic proportions for many people, but it could have been worse. It could have been way worse. Is the church prepared to deal with it, both in serving their own and those outside the walls of the church? It's open lines issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And give me your ideas on how the church can help members and non-members in a time of crisis like this. I definitely do. Help me brainstorm on this one, because when something like this happens, you immediately do a post game, don't you? After the power's back on and after everything's cleaned up, then you say, what can I do next time? So a lot of people, what did they do? They went out and they bought a generator. They said, next time I will not be caught with my pants down. I will have a generator ready to go and a can of gasoline, and I'll have power, at least for myself. Did you go out and buy a generator, and who'd you buy it for? Just yourself? I mean, that's nice. You want to keep the power on. Many people have to have the power on. Should the church do that? Should the church stock a few generators for people in real dire need at a time like this? Now, everybody who calls in and emails us with a question or a comment will get the booklet, The Church's Role of Mercy in the Community. Okay, here's my story. Actually, it's my story and Jeff's story, because we happen to be stuck together in this particular crisis. And I will tell you, you talk about people you want to be stuck with if the world is coming to an end. I don't know if I want to be stuck with Jeff. He pretty much walked ahead and left me in the dark in Lambert Airport. I mean, I had to really hustle to keep up with him, and he was just carrying one bag and I was carrying two. And it was completely dark. So here's the story. On Wednesday, we cut out early here. You probably were unaware of that because we just ran a pre-recorded last hour of a sermon review. And Jeff and I headed quickly over to Lambert Airport because we had a flight to catch at, 7 o'clock, somewhere in that neighborhood, and we had to be there. And everything went beautifully. We got there in time. We had enough time to go grab a bite to eat. We got on the plane. The sun was shining. It was beautiful. We were anticipating going to some cooler weather out in Denver and then to Colorado Springs to speak at a Higher Things youth conference out there, which I understand went very well, even without me, which is a wonder. And, well, I've already told you that we never made it out to Colorado, because we did make it to the plane, and this was a little plane holding, 30 to 50 people. It wasn't a big plane, and it was, they were transporting orphans, I guess, because there were an inordinate number of children on this plane, little children, all in the toddler stage, which I don't mind, because I've had kids. But it kind of adds to the saga here. Well, we're out there. We hadn't even taxied away. We just walked across the tarmac, walked up onto the steps and got into our plane, and we're waiting. And then the wind began to blow. And I didn't even notice the wind was blowing until the back of the plane started jumping up and down. I don't know if it's actually leaving the ground, but it was moving up and down in a very aggressive way. I fly a lot, and turbulence doesn't bother me. Turbulence is like driving over a bumpy road. It's just about that dangerous. We hadn't even left the ground, and there was turbulence. And for some reason, they'd left the little cargo conveyor belt attached to the back door of this plane, and it was making a noise like the tail was being torn off. Now, I could look out the window and see that it was still attached and that it was just rattling around. So, you know, we weren't that scared. Both of us got on our cell phones. We said, okay, we're going to be delayed a little bit. And the pilot came on. He said, we're going to be delayed. We've got wind blowing in. You know, everybody just sit tight. And then he came on about 10 minutes later, 10, 20 minutes later, and he said, well, we're still delayed. And by the way, they shut down the airport, which I thought, that's unusual.
You forgot the sixth sense of humor the stewardess had.
Oh,
well. She didn't help things whatsoever.
Yes. This is what happens the minute we get on the plane. I had forgotten that. Thank you for reminding me. The minute we get on the plane, usually the stewardess is there simply to hold the little oxygen thing and show you the belt and all that kind of stuff, and no one pays attention. Well, this is a stewardess. Talk about someone who is acting outside their vocation. Dear woman, this stewardess, you know, we've had, in our many travels, we've had airline pilots who think that they're Jerry Seinfeld. They come on instead of saying, you know, our flight time will be this and I'll get you there safely. They're cracking jokes up there in the cockpit. I mean, sometimes they're funny, but sometimes they're not. This stewardess, I think she was just about to go into her shtick when she looked out the window back toward our direction in the back of the plane. And the first thing she said when she comes on the little microphone is, uh-oh, that looks bad. Is she saying this to a group of people sitting in an airplane and, as I said, filled about half full with little children? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, she really ought to just, there should be a switch between brain and mouth when you're a stewardess. I mean, if there's real danger, you say, when you say, uh-oh, that should mean something like open the emergency exit. But it was, uh-oh, that looks bad. Wow, that's really dark. That's not good. Things like that. And everyone's looking out the windows trying to figure out what she can see that we can't see that. I've never seen that before. I've never seen a storm of that magnitude in my life. Coming from the stewardess, you know, these people spend years of their life in the air. We haven't even left the ground. And we eventually never will. So the plane is jumping up and down. The children are crying. They have to go to the bathroom about every 10 minutes. Parents are trying to console them. The stewardess continues with her, you know, uh-oh, and boy, this ain't going to be good. And occasionally tossing in, we ain't going nowhere. I think she said that a bunch of, we ain't going nowhere. Now, look, I have been on the road for a long time. I'd been in France for a week, and I had been at the mercy of various airlines during the course of those travels. And while I wanted to go see the youth in Colorado Springs, I was not savoring another airplane ride. I was not savoring another hotel room, especially if I had to room with Jeff, which was the big worry in my mind. I was not savoring being away from my family anymore or sleeping in a strange bed. I simply, if I had my druthers, wanted to stay home. So the minute the wind started to blow, I started making plans to go home. I'm like, all right, hey, if she says we're not going anyplace, I'm not going anyplace. They wouldn't let us off the plane. We're just jumping around out there on the tarmac at Lambert. And they told us that the airport had closed. And then he comes on and says, look, in about 10 minutes, this thing's going to blow through. And then we're going to have to wait in line. So we'll get you there and you'll be late. But, you know, those who have connections, don't worry, blah, blah, blah. And we weren't too worried. We pretty much had all the time in the world. And at this point, I think we're still going to take off eventually. Then the pilot comes on and says, the airport has been damaged. We didn't know what that meant. And about 2 minutes later, the stewardess comes on. And if my recollection is correct, she says, we need to leave this plane now. This is the stewardess who had been consoling us with the kind words like, uh-oh, that looks bad. Never seen a storm like that. We ain't going nowhere. She comes on after she's got everybody really worked up. And she says, we need to leave this plane now. Another tornado might be coming through. And I thought, another tornado? Where was the first one? Maybe that was what she was watching back over my shoulder. So we grab everything. We get off the plane. We have to run across the tarmac.
Gets worse.
Oh, this is just the warm-up for the fall of civilization. We are still living safely within the bubble of civilization in this little plane. Even though the children are crying, the stewardess is making terrible predictions about what might happen to us all. The pilot seems oblivious to the fact that the plane is being pushed down the runway by nothing but the wind. We're watching planes come in, taxi in, no one's leaving. We get out of the plane, and that's when it kind of begins. The panic issue begins. I mean, we weren't panicked. We were just, hey, we'll get off the plane. We'll be a little safer inside the airport. They start yelling at us. first the stewardess is like, get to the terminal, get to the terminal. We're grabbing our bags, we're running across. And we get to the terminal and there's absolutely no power in there. And just about the minute we walk through the door into the terminal, everyone starts yelling at us. We got the flight crew saying, you know, move, move. And we're thinking, where do you move? It's pitch black. There's some guy way up there, like 100 yards away with a little tiny pin light flashlight. So we're kind of following him. We don't know where they're going. People stop to look out the windows. They want to see, you know, what are we running from? And that's when the 7-foot former Marine St. Louis police officer who probably saved our lives appeared right down Concourse D. He's standing there blocking our way. And at first, he's kind of nice. He's like, you people can't come this way. You know, there's power down there. You can't come this way. There's been severe damage to the airport. And then within about 15 seconds, he went from being stern but polite to being the former Marine. Now, my brother has told me about this because he's been in the Army. And he says, you know, when you want to control a crowd, there's a tone of voice that you take with people, a volume of voice that you take with people, which basically says to them, you're all about to die. So listen to me. And that was exactly what this, I can't reproduce it. I don't have this guy's lung capacity, but he was basically yelling at the top of his lungs in a very angry tone of voice with his billy club out for us to keep moving. Now, remember, there are no lights in the airport and we don't know where we're going. Once you turn off the lights at Lambert, it becomes like a rat's maze. So I'm just following this big crowd of what I soon discovered to be baby boomers, you know, former hippies. And as soon as a police officer starts yelling, they start organizing a sit-in. They slow down. The louder he yells, the slower they walk. And I'm not joking. I mean, that's the baby boom generation. I don't know if I want to be stuck at the end of the world with Jeff, but I definitely do not want to be stuck at the end of the world anywhere near a large crowd of baby boomers. Because when your life is on the line and the police officer is yelling at you behind your head, and by the way, the last comment he made, and he was right behind me, Jeff had already run up ahead, the last comment he made was, I'm going to start cracking skulls. I'm not joking. That's what he said. And these baby boomers are organizing a sit-in in front of me. Slowing down. They're shouting back at the police officer. Stupid, stupid people. I'm sorry. He was big. He was mean. He was bald. He had the billy club and the gun. And he was threatening to crack skulls. And they're sassing him.
And he's the only one with any solution.
He's the only one trying to get us out of the airport. The rest of them are like, I'm going to wait here at this crucial juncture in this doorway. I'm going to stand here in this doorway. While people are trying to evacuate the airport, maybe they'll get my flight back online. You know, we don't want to leave. No, we're missing our flight. And finally, he's just like a bulldozer, a verbal bulldozer pushing us out the door, down to baggage claim and out the exit. And we walk out and we get rained on. And then finally we get back to the cars and we hear what the damage is from one of the employees who's leaving. And they shut down the airport. And I get to go home to my little town in Illinois where there was still power. And enjoy a rather quiet evening and have a free weekend, which I was not going to have before. Now, we learned that the disintegration of civilization in a darkened airport was amazing to watch. And so we learned the city, at least, is not ready for a major crisis like this. The question I have for you, now that you've heard my story, I'd love to hear yours. Is the Christian church ready for this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Craig?
Didn't hear this. What was wrong with the airport?
A section of the D concourse roof blew off and landed in the middle of Highway 70. A big enough section to stop traffic. And then I guess tractor trailers were blowing over on a couple of the bridges and on Highway 70. And they lost power. And then they lost emergency power. We got this from an employee who we were riding the shuttle with. They lost emergency power, and there was no place. No one was going any place at all. I don't know how many people I heard say, everyone grabs their cell phones. Everyone. You notice that if you would have invested in cell phones about 5 years ago, any cell phones, it doesn't make any difference. If you would have invested, you would be a billionaire, because the instant we get out and get a signal, every person has at least one cell phone to their ear. And they're trying to find someone to come and pick them up, or they're trying to tell their loved ones. My cell phone, I do a prepaid thing, had like 1 minute left on it. Jeff's battery was going dead.
You had like 8 minutes left.
I had 8 minutes left, yes.
And mine's dead. Mine's dead.
Yeah.
Except for the Middle Eastern-looking man, I don't know if you noticed him, was on the payphone.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
he was on the payphone. Well,
he's on there a long time.
And we're standing there thinking, what became of our orderly and civilized lives? It was some wind. And the next thing you know, we're without our little electronic saviors, they're our gods we carry around in our pockets. The one we turn to. I mean, Luther says, what is a god? A god is that to which you turn in times of trouble. And I found out very quickly that one of the gods that I carry around with me is my cell phone. And it was failing me. It was running out of minutes. I mean, what kind of a god runs out of minutes? What kind of a god's battery dies in the middle of a terrible windstorm? Not a very good god, if you ask me. So did your church do anything to help fellow parishioners or neighbors out during the blackout? Do you think the church is prepared to deal with a major crisis? And give me your ideas on how the church can help members and non-members during a crisis like this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issues@kfuo.org. I want to hear from you during this break. It's a great time to call or email us. And everybody who calls or emails will get a copy of this booklet called The Church's Role of Mercy in the Community. Just simple things, suggestions that the church can do now to be prepared for the kind of thing that happened this last week in the St. Louis area. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issues@kfuo.org. Coming up in a little bit, in about 25 minutes, Serge Trifkovic will join us to talk about the Middle East crisis. He's foreign affairs editor for Chronicles Magazine, a magazine of American culture. And then audio open lines throughout the rest of the program. We'll be hearing from Michael J. Fox and Orrin Hatch. Both of them are reacting to the president's veto of federal funding for embryonic stem cell research last week. Michael J. Fox, a very sympathetic argument. Orrin Hatch, well, you'll just have to hear it to evaluate it. There's also a piece from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly about this Dr. Francis Collins, who's making the rounds. I guess he's got a new book. I think that's what it is. He's got a new book. He's called the father of the human genome. He's not actually the father. He just told us what the letters were in the human genome. And he's going to opine about how God created the world. He says he's a person of faith. He even pulls out his guitar and sings the verse of a hymn. Talk about boomers. They never go any place without the guitar. You know, to make their final point, just down, 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 down. Tune it up. Strum a tune. Point made. Everybody goes home happy. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you ever wanted to learn more about the ancient biblical land of Israel? Well, the Issues Etc. book of the month for July is titled The Land of Milk and Honey, An Introduction to the Geography of Israel. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about The Land of Milk and Honey on our website, issuesetc.org. It's a great resource if you've ever visited or would like to visit the Middle East. You'll find plenty of color photos and maps in the Land of Milk and Honey. The cost is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. Experience the biblical land of Israel with this book, The Land of Milk and Honey, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. The book is The Land of Milk and Honey, and it's our Issues Etc. book of the month for July.
How can we increase the number of pro-life voices in Washington?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List. named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Despite being vastly outspent by abortion rights groups, including Emily's List, MoveOn.org, and Planned Parenthood PAC, the number of winning pro-life candidates endorsed by the Susan B. Anthony List Candidate Fund has increased in the past four elections. In 2004, we won 27 of 35 races. How did we do it? By mobilizing our nationwide network of over 140,000 members in all 50 states. With your support, we can do even better. Help us put more voices for life in Washington. Join the Susan B. Anthony List today.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Yesterday in church, we again did the ritual common confession. Most merciful God, we confess that we are by nature sinful and unclean. We have sinned against you in thought, word, and deed, etc., etc. Some words in that ritual stopped me cold. We justly deserve your present and eternal punishment. The storms that struck Missouri and Illinois weren't Katrina, but they were still bad enough that President Bush declared the region a federal disaster area. Over 500,000 homes were without power, many still are. The dollar cost will be great, and several lives were lost. This qualifies as present punishment. When I had told a friend about the damage to the seminary campus, he said, "The Lord be with you." And I said, "He was, with his alien presence." Sometimes God doesn't do the gentle things we would expect. He comes to us in ways that seem alien to our expectations of a good God. Still, we trust his goodness, interpreting these alien events as the Father's tough love to draw us to greater dependence upon him. Proverbs said, "The Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son." And Hebrews 12, verse 5 gets to the heart of present punishment. Do not lose heart when he rebukes you. Even in suffering, especially in suffering, the Lord is with you.
Focus on the Family presents a message of struggle and eventual triumph. Former Mrs. United States Sherry Rose Shepherd tells of growing up in a home wrought with divorce and how she used drugs and food as a way of escape, but soon discovered that nothing holds lasting value apart from knowing Jesus Christ. That's next time on Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Okay, let's go to the phones here on the question of whether or not the church was prepared, whether your church did anything to help those during storms this last week, and the aftermath, of course, continues. Now, one thing before I go to the phones, I do not tell my collapse of civilization Lambert story, Jeff abandoning me to the baby boomers there in a darkened airport. I don't tell that story to elicit any sympathy because I have not been personally inconvenienced in any real way by this storm. I'm just being honest with you. Haven't been personally inconvenienced by it, and it actually was not an inconvenience to be sent home that night. I considered it a great convenience to be sent home that night and not take that flight because I got to be at home and have a free weekend, which I wasn't going to have anyway. So I'm not telling that to elicit any sympathy. No sympathy necessary, please. Let's go to the phones and talk first with Cindy, who calls from South County. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I want to tell you how I spent my summer vacation.
Okay.
We had a great time because a very good friend of mine took us into her home. And we were there, let's see, the first night was, we stayed the first night at our house Wednesday night. My 86-year-old mother and I spent Thursday night with her. And my husband stayed at our house because he was a little, you know, uneasy about leaving it alone. And we also have two dogs, so somebody had to be with the dogs. And then my husband and I and my mother stayed, you know, the rest of the time except for last night. My husband and I just stayed, and my mother stayed at her house because she insisted on staying at home. But this is a friend that I have met through KFUO Radio. and we have been friends for probably 10 years, and close to 10 years. And she and her husband took us in, fed us, you know, let us sleep, and we had, and basically we had a party for all those days. We had a wonderful time.
So what about your church? Do you know of, I mean, you may not know of it because a lot of people are incommunicado during a thing like this when their power's out, but
right.
Aware of anything at your church? I'm very thankful for your friend, too.
My friend calls you all the time. My friend is Jane from Arnold. And our church, I went to church yesterday. Our pastor's on vacation. And naturally, everybody, that was the talk of the church. Do you have power? Don't you have power? It's not how are you. You know, it's do you have power? And everybody had power except us that I spoke to. But we had a young seminarian. I mean, he's a fourth-year seminarian. His name was Paul Nelson. And he was the supply pastor. And he talked, his sermon was about a power. He didn't even talk about the storm, okay? He talked about power. Power in this country, power, political power, people in political power, people in entertainment who are powerful, all different people who are in the pastorate are very powerful. And then he talked about how the world looks at Jesus and a man, you know, a baby coming in a manger, and how there's no power in that whatsoever. There's no power.
Not that you can see.
The world looks at that and goes, you know, it passes it by. And then he talked about our baptism and the power that we get every week when we take the Holy Supper. And when I came to church, it was hard, Todd. It was hard going through this, you know. Not the hardest thing I've ever been through, but it wasn't an easy thing. And I have an 86-year-old mom that lives right next door to me. And so, I mean, it was kind of a difficult thing. It was very hard on her.
Before I let you go, Cindy, any ideas about what the church could do to be better prepared or prepared for something like this?
Take people in. Take people into your homes. And, I mean, it was wonderful that that happened to us. It was quite a blessing.
Cindy, thank you very much for the call. All right, let's talk with Robin, who calls from Manchester. Hi, Robin, and thanks for waiting.
Hello. Yeah, I belong to St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, and we were that evening in the middle of Vacation Bible School. And what I discovered was 3/4 of the adults there were in denial that we were in a storm. And it was getting black. The electricity went out. And we were upstairs, and finally I said to the pastor, my daughter calls me. She's concerned. There's tornado warnings all over the place. And I said to the pastor, we need to get these kids downstairs. And he goes, yeah, we need to get them downstairs. And a lot of people are going, yeah, but the alarm didn't go off. The alarm didn't go off. And it's black outside. It's black inside, but the alarm didn't go off. So I seen and witnessed denial from a lot of adults. And finally, we all went into a room, and we didn't experience any damage, just the power outage, and we had to eventually all go home. We did not have flashlights. We did not have candles. We were not prepared. So from this experience, I learned that the church needs to have some generators in case there is a big disaster, some generators for the church to open its doors, some flashlights, some candles, some preparation, maybe some food, and for the parishioners to open its doors to people who, like Cindy had said, need a home to go into. We just suffered tree damage. We didn't even suffer at home in Manchester. We didn't suffer any outage of power, but I would have definitely opened my home to people if I'd have known someone who needed it.
Robin, thank you very much. You know, I'm trying to think. I'm one of these guys, Mr. Flashlight. My wife makes fun of me because I keep flashlights all over the house. It's just, you know, it's a man thing. Men love flashlights. I don't know why. Candle. I mean, I want the one with the 1 billion candle power, whatever that is. enough to fry eggs if you point it at somebody. That's what I want. And my wife laughs at me that I keep these things handy until the power goes out. She laughs no more. She says, go get the flashlight. And I, you know, like a superhero, dash to the kitchen and grab the flashlight. I mean, it's just simple preparedness in my mind. What does the church need to do to help its members or non-members during a blackout? Did your church do anything? Do you think the church is prepared to help in time of crisis? It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. this Monday, July the 24th. Our phone number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Everybody who calls or emails will get this booklet, The Church's Role of Mercy in the Community, that's put out by LCMS World Relief. Let's talk with Linda, who calls from Farmington. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Pastor. Well, I was interested in your story, and I was just going to ask a question, like the unprofessional stewardess and the pilot and the rude officers and the stubborn baby boomers. Did you get the sense, you know, this is my mission field? Because I think we didn't have too much trouble down here, but there was some things I had to help with, and I've been in disastrous things before and had to be, you know, helping, but I think our demeanor more than our help is what is so important as being prepared to be in a situation like that, because they won't forget how you were, how the Lord gave you His peace and His strength, and they could just feel that coming from you, and that, you know, this confidence that He gives. There was a pastor yesterday, our pastor, he says something I'll never forget. He said, you know, there are two people who don't care about my age or my ability, and that's my horse when I'm sitting on him, and that's God Almighty, because, you know, they'll both give me their strength. You know, it doesn't matter how strong I am. And when I'm in a situation where I think, you know, I can't do this, I always know His strength is made perfect in my weakness. Like a horse.
Linda, thank you very much. I kind of like the comparison between God and a horse. I think I have to explore that a little bit more when I have some spare time. What sense did I get in amidst all the, you know, the story that I told about being at Lambert during the storm? Well, first of all, one point, the rude officer, I ain't complaining about him. I considered him my best friend. He was doing his best to save my life, and if he was scaring the pants off me to do it, I really don't care. I was not complaining about that. I was far more concerned about the baby boomers who were organizing their sit-in in the doorway, hoping that their flight would take off and sassing the police officer. Not a good time to sass a police officer. I mean, leave your sass at home and you can go and relive your hippie days some other time. You do it from the convenience of your living room, but not while the airport is being evacuated. I got a sense of total depravity, the total depravity of man and the facade of that is civilization, how quickly it comes crashing down if the power goes out. And that's all that really happened, was the electricity went off. And it hadn't been off a half hour. And it was kind of martial law in the airport. Including my own total depravity, I must say. I have to admit that when we did finally get out and I was waiting for a shuttle to pick me up and none were picking anyone up, they were just driving around in circles. I was waiting for a shuttle to take us back to where we had parked the car. My level of frustration was pretty high because if I wasn't going to Denver, I wanted to go home and I did not want to be stuck at the airport any longer than I had to be. So had you been out there at arriving flights or departing flights, whichever it was, on Wednesday evening, you might have heard Wilkin trying to hail a shuttle in a less than friendly way. I wasn't actually mean, but little concerned that they weren't picking anybody up. Hey, the total depravity, there was enough to go around that evening, without a doubt. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. One of the things that Linda mentioned got me thinking that, you know, the early Christians who lived with kind of not just disasters that lasted a week or 2 weeks, but the kind that swept across Europe and other parts of the world that lasted years, perhaps even decades, wars, famine, plague, the kind of plague that kills two-thirds of the population of every town that it affects. You know what the early Christians did? Many of them, those that were there during the time of the plague, stayed. They didn't flee. At the risk of their own lives, to care for those who were the victim, who were going to die. These people were going to die anyway. The plague was not a curable thing. If you got it, you died. And they stayed to take care of them in their dying hours. And there are even a few stellar examples of early Christians who, when everyone else was fleeing the village or everyone else was fleeing the region, were headed the opposite direction, in. They could have stayed where they were at and remained relatively safe, but they went in to care for those who were the plague victims. And that's the kind of preparedness I'm talking about here. Let's go back to the phones. Up next, Eleanor from Edwardsville. Hi, Eleanor.
Sorry, there was an interruption on the telephone.
That's all right. You're on.
I'm in a wheelchair, and the first thing I did when it got dark was lay down. I fell asleep immediately. I'm not that afraid of a storm, and I'm not that afraid of a tornado. I'm old enough to realize that sometime I have to go. I can't get very far in the wheelchair anyhow. But sound asleep, I was rudely awakened by a gentleman at the door telling me I had to make up my mind. Fire chief said that the building had to be evacuated and I had to be ready within an hour. And I said, who the H is he to tell me I have to move? Anyway, he was sort of taken aback. He came back real fast and told me that he knew my son. And he was there, you know, the cars were there, the fire engines were there. The Madison County Transit was there, ready to move people. And I didn't even know what had happened. I wasn't aware. I didn't even realize that the lights were out or anything.
So you'd slept through the better part of it.
I'm sorry?
You had slept through the better part of it.
Yes, I did. God, with me, you know. Anyhow, I needn't have been as rude to that gentleman. I'd let him know that I was staying. I wasn't going anywhere. And I saw people going into the buses and everything, and I wondered what I should do. My son and my grandson appeared at the door just about that time. My grandson grabbed the candles and put them all on the table, and my son had an ice, one of those igloos, and said it was filled with ice, start hauling up the perishable foods and putting them in the freezer and that with the ice in it. By that time, I was well aware of what was happening, and he said, open up your windows, open up your windows. So he goes over and opens up all my windows, and there I am. I wonder, you know, who else is staying in this building? Am I the only one?
Were you the only one, Eleanor?
No, I wasn't. There were 20 others, you know, from various parts of the building. And when I did get outside and saw that there were other people moving around, they were having a picnic in the recreation room, barbecuing wieners and what have you. So even the prospect of spending the night without power didn't bother me. I don't know when the power came back on, but here I was. I was here, but I was safe. But my bedroom is really a solace to me because a picture of the Lord's Supper there, Christ knocking at the door, and the Good Shepherd. So I'm happy.
Eleanor, thank you very much for the call. So, I mean, I imagine this is the case with a lot of people, especially people who were shut in, people who were elderly, people who were unable to get around very well by themselves. I'd love to hear from some of our elderly or shut-in listeners. Were you contacted by anyone in your church? I mean, Eleanor talks about her son and her grandson coming by. That's family. Thank goodness for them. A lot of people don't have the family. You know, here's a good idea, since we're brainstorming. What about just a list? We got the shut-in list, you know, that the pastor keeps. But a list that's accessible to the whole congregation of the people who are homebound or shut-in or in some other way in need of assistance, special assistance, during a list that everybody has. Doesn't have to be any more organized than that, just so that the individual members can, who are able to, check in on them. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issues, etc@kfuo.org. Herman's calling from Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Thank you for taking my call. Just two comments briefly. It seemed like you were in more danger from recalcitrant hippies here at the Lambert Airport than you were over in France from any Muslims rioting on the street.
But, I think so, yes.
I was just, maybe you can do a service around the continual crisis that often occurs in St. Louis, and that's traffic. I was just wondering, what is your preferred route from the direction you come in Illinois to and from the campus? Is there any route you can take driving blindfolded, you know so well, that's just a breeze, and you encounter no delays, no congestion or anything?
Now, you are touching upon a very sore subject with me, Herman. Thank you very much for the call. My preferred route is the straightest and shortest route, which takes me over the Poplar Street Bridge, which, of course, is no longer, while it remains the shortest route as the crow flies, it is no longer the shortest in terms of time. Sometimes the JB Bridge will do. It's a little closer to where I live, but it sends me through the city, which I generally don't prefer. You know, if I really have to, I'll go all the way around 270 and back in. You know, I have to come right to the heart of St. Louis to go to work. So while I think I drive the Poplar Street route every day blindfolded. I mean, mentally blindfolded. I get to work and I don't remember how I got there or what I did in the meantime. I was just thinking about something else. Yeah, Jeff takes the Eads Bridge, but you're coming from the north on the Metro East, aren't you? And I wouldn't even be able to pick out the Eads Bridge on a map, probably. Where does that take you? Take you north of St. Louis or through downtown?
It takes me to Washington. Yeah, downtown St. Louis.
Downtown Washington.
Take a left on 14th, get on to 40 West, and bada bing.
Okay, so, okay, and it's not too bad. No congestion? Yeah, the Poplar Street Bridge is in a... They're doing dental work out there on the Poplar Street Bridge, and it really smells bad. Whatever they're doing, whoever knew concrete could smell so bad? And it's not the asphalt smell. It is, they're doing something funky on that bridge. They're putting some chemicals down that are not good, or they're taking them up, and it's not good. And every time I drive past, I think, I'm killing brain cells just making this drive. So that's the answer to your question. And yes, I was in more danger from recalcitrant hippies than I was when I was in France from any Muslims in Europe. I'm convinced of that. I would rather be on an international flight with Muslims than in a safe airport with the lights out with a bunch of recalcitrant American hippies. Lynn calls from her car. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi.
You had made a comment about the churches helping out.
Yes.
And I was listening the first time I ever been listening to y'all radio station, because usually I don't listen to radio station. But I just have a comment. My church is Jesus is All Family Worship Center. Mostly our members had, we are a small congregation, and most of our members' lights was out, but my family, license on. So my pastor, he called around and found out who her license was on. So we all came together into my home, and I opened my home up to everybody, even people who I didn't even know, strangers from their family, to come in and stay with us. And we had a fellowship thing, and it was awesome. You know, we didn't take the crisis real bad and upset or saying crazy things, but we took it as the Lord putting us together as a family, you know, to get to know each other. So I got to know people who I never met before, family members from other people, and it was really, I mean, it's a bad situation to people, but to us, it wasn't bad. You know, we was blessed We had food. Our deep freezer was full. Food was, we barbecued. We did a whole lot. So our church helped out a whole lot with food and shelter.
Lynn, thank you very much. Now, see, that's what I'm talking about. Her church, while it may not have had a plan, I'm not talking about, you know, pith helmets tanks full of water. I'm just talking about the basic preparedness that the church can provide while the people are cutting the limbs and carrying stuff away. What is the church suited to do in a time of crisis? Is your church suited and ready to do it? This comes from Joel in South County, I believe. He says, Faith Lutheran Church in Oakville served from Thursday afternoon until Sunday afternoon as a cooling center for South County. I think they're out there on Telegraph Road, if I'm not mistaken. And South County was hit pretty hard. Says, we had 70-plus elderly spend the night for a few nights until everyone received power back on Sunday afternoon. We were open 24-7 and had people come through our doors as late as 3 a.m. at times. Bravo. Exactly. You know, see, the church, if the church has power, what does it have at a time of crisis like that? It's got power. It might have water, depending on, you know, a boil order or something like that. It's going to have electricity and air conditioning. It's going to have all the stuff that people need in a time like that. That's exactly what I'm talking about. John calls from St. Louis. Hi, John.
Hello. Hello.
John, what's your question or comment?
Well, I was wanting to comment on your question about the churches.
Yeah.
You know, if you put a big old pulpit up there and give them a big robe and a hat, maybe you could tell them the winner, they can have that robe, you know. And they can go out and help somebody. Because a lot of them, they don't even teach the Word of God. It seems to me they don't care about anybody but themselves.
All right, John, thank you very much. Our time runs short here at the end of this hour of Open Lines. That's exactly why I'm asking the question. If the church had power, most of the members had power, people probably said, well, it's passed us by. But we were talking about, at the height of the thing, a 500,000 customers, as they say. I think it equated to about 2 million people, they estimated, without power for days on end. What kind of a witness does it say when the church says, well, we got our air conditioning and our power and everything's okay, and everyone shows up and they've all had their shower and their shave and have gotten dressed in the cool of their AC? When a mile away, there are people living kind of on a day-to-day basis what I went through for just a few minutes there in Lambert Airport. When we come back from this break, Dr. Serge Trifkovic will be our guest. We're going to talk with him for about a half hour on the Middle East crisis. He's foreign affairs editor for Chronicles Magazine, a magazine of American culture. We'll be right back to talk about Israel, Lebanon, Syria, and the whole mess. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.